The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty then. We are going to hit it as soon as the music is over. It's time for the True Wealth Radio Show intro on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. Joining me in studio today is my main man,
Matt Dixon.
And we are talking today about the PSYOP. Right? Psychological operation for investors.
Man.
Investor PSYOP.
I'm going to get out my lounge chair and the pillow, and you're just you're going to walk me through this.
None of the above. We are going to go through.
It's a psychology session.
Today, we're going to be talking about the mindset of investing and some of the common mistakes and things that we see with investors. And why do we want to talk about this? Because the news, like, it's so weird. We just put a piece out for our clients about this, right? About how, why does the economic data seem to look good on paper in some ways, other ways not so much, and yet we feel like everything's so broken.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but from where I sit, I look at these news articles and it feels like a different narrative every other week, right? Like this week it's, we've had 6 great days in the market. But, you know, you go back a week or two and it's like, oh, interest rates. And so you never know what you're going to get when you open up the news.
Well, I have a pretty good idea what we're going to get. So, like, local news versus elsewhere.
Okay.
So what are you going to get locally? The stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. You know why?
Because that's what's relevant to this area.
Yeah, that actually sells,
mm-hmm.
right? The stuff. Like, we actually want to know what's going on around here. I want to hear about the happenings.
Yeah, the marching band took third place. We want to know
about it. Yes, how's the football team doing, right? What's the river level for fishermen, right?
Well, and just before we got on air, what were they talking about? Winco opened up. Everyone's excited about a new grocery store.
This is relevant to your world because it's right here. But the farther away from right here we get, the more that your attention becomes divided, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you get somebody's attention? Well, you wave, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what if a wave doesn't work? Well, then you wave bigger. What if that doesn't work?
You scream.
I don't know. Blow something up.
Scream at the top of your lungs.
You start making a lot of activity to get the mm-hmm. attention, right?
Right.
And so that's where you get into the news cycles of basically, you know, it's the rubber neck kind of stuff. What is going to get you to turn and stare and gawk? And it's usually violence and sex,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the stuff.
Right.
Okay. And we're relatively simple people in that respect. It tends to work.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then you pick a few pet issues that are kind of controversial and you start building an audience around who aligns with the position you take.
Sure.
Okay. And so there you go. There's your recipe for national news, which is what? It is renting your eyeballs to advertisers.
Yep. And I think that's where a lot of people get freaked out, especially in this field that we work in, where you're looking at the stock market. Someone hears a headline article, horrible day in the markets. The markets dropped 200 points. And then you look at it on a percentage basis and you're like, wait a minute, that was like 0.25% or whatever.
Right.
And then you're like, that's not a huge move. That's just clickbait. You just wanted me to click and read your article.
Well, and you also hear words like, you know, markets collapse.
Oh, yeah.
And you go, well, what's a collapse? Right. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, they collapsed by 0.7%. And you go, dude, it's Tuesday.
Right.
Like, that's just sometimes that happens on Tuesday, you know, and we don't say when the markets go up by, you know, so you fall by 0.7%, you probably need to come back up by 0.75 to get back to where you started. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you're like, oh, you know, markets launch 0.75%. Like, you don't get the same kind of upside headlines. And you know why? Because we are cognitively biased toward negative news. It's a survival mechanism, by the way, right? Oh,
right.
That thing that was painful, avoid doing that again.
Block that out of my memory.
No, you block the pain part out, but you don't block the lesson, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are way more sensitive to negative news than positive news.
It's true.
Way more. And they're like biologically wired for that kind of stuff. So if that's the case, then what do you think you're going to see more of? And what are you going to remember? Right? They've played this game on the internet. It's not super successful to say, you know, Fluffy Bunnies Flood Parade. Right? And people are like, oh, fun. Next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you say like, rabid bunnies attack school bus of children, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, I gotta know more.
I'm sharing this one. Yeah.
And so it's, and there have been some groups that have been more successful at sort of clickbaiting around positive stuff, but most of it's clickbaiting around negative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's back, you know, it's back to the sex and violence thing.
Right. That so, big old emotional roller coaster.
Well, and it's just, it's the big drivers for people, right? Is that, you know, seek pleasure, avoid pain. But again, that pain index is really high. So that tends to sell pretty well. And it tends to color how investors view stuff too. So today, I want to talk more about when we say PSYOP, right? I mean, yeah, okay, that's clickbaity too, right? Sure.
Yeah.
But it's this idea that the psychology of investing and where some investors trip up in this process and where some investors seem to do really well. You know, and let's kind of, we're going to use this example a bunch today. Okay. Warren Buffett. Okay.
All right.
Warren Buffett is one of, if not the best investor of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But what has Warren Buffett also done remarkably well?
I think he's done a good job of avoiding popularity contests, and he's kind of stuck to this value mindset of like, well, does what I'm buying have value, and can I justify it? And yeah. If so, let's go for it.
And my favorite thing, because I set Matt up for this. I didn't tell him I was going to do this either, right? So Warren Buffett is also old. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to get into the nuance of like, I'm not going to get into the nuance of like, but he started investing when he was like 10. Literally.
I actually read on that. It was, I think he started with some gumball machines.
Yeah, he was pinball machines. He would like rebuild, and then he was selling pinball machines. Mm-hmm. He used that money to start buying his first shares of investments.
Yeah, and even before the pinball machine, he started it by getting quarters or pennies out of a gumball machine, and then he graduated to putting pinball machines in the, you know, little delis and places where he could get food.
He's always sort of hustled for this, and
then he bought a piece of property or something.
So I don't know all of it, but what I can tell you is that he and others, but primarily he and Charlie Munger, built Berkshire Hathaway, which is now a giant company sitting on billions of dollars in available cash right now.
Yeah.
And been an incredibly successful investor. They're both comfortably into their 90s.
Yeah.
Right? So when you have an 80-year time horizon to allow markets to compound and compound and compound, and you don't make significant mistakes at inopportune times. And Warren Buffett has been very good, and I should credit Charlie Munger too, but they've been very good about remaining disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have an opportunity to create massive wealth.
Right. Time is your friend when it comes to building wealth.
Yeah. I mean, Warren Buffett has said, like, he could have bought the S&P 500 and just kept investing in it and still done incredibly well.
A
billionaire.
Yeah.
You know, many times over, doing that, doing what he did. And, you know, and they do some unique things, right? Like, don't go out and try to copy Warren Buffett, per se, because Berkshire Hathaway gets to buy whole companies sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're not investing the way that you and I are investing, buying stocks, per se. Doesn't mean they don't buy stock, but they go in and buy controlling stakes in companies sometimes, like whole companies. Right? Buys insurance companies, the whole company. Not like, oh, well, you know, I became a shareholder of.
Right.
You know. And so when they go buy Apple, they buy, you know, 3% of Apple. Like, wait a second. That's a multi-trillion dollar company. It's like, yeah, well, they go put $100 billion into Apple. They actually move the needle.
It's mind-blowing to me how many people try and just copy whatever he's doing. They look at his holdings, you know, his big holdings. Oh, I'm just going to do the same thing. And then some of the times, you know, that might work. But I also look at it, I'm like, are you chasing?
Well, I think you have to be, because typically speaking, the trades that Berkshire Hathaway makes, they get reported, I believe, on what they call the 10-Q. So they're quarterly reporting. So you're trading after him.
Right. Not getting the same pricing.
Yes. So it doesn't mean that you can't potentially do okay with that.
Right.
But the point here about using Warren Buffett as our example, though, is like one of the things he did was he's lasted a really long time, and he's continued to deploy consistency the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And some of the way that he's been consistent is have enough slush on the side that he was never forced to liquidate things at an inopportune time.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Having a little bit of cash reserve for a good moment to buy something.
He's made mistakes, by the way. Warren Buffett's not infallible. There have been investment losses that were significant.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had to like take the L on a position and deal with that. So he's not infallible.
But
right?
But I think you brought up a really good point that investors should catch right there. He was liquid enough to be able to absorb the bad times, and he was also liquid enough to be able to see a really good opportunity and be like, well, I'm confident in this. I'm going to move forward. And I think, that applies to things outside of the market too, right? Like,
Investing doesn't just have to. We talk about the markets a lot because it's kind of like our jam, right? Mm-hmm. We help our customers with that a lot. But investing is more than that.
Right.
It's not just.
Well, I'll give you an example. I have a boat, right? I have a drift boat, and I love it. It's great. I wasn't in the market for another boat, but I had cash on the side, and someone posted something that was like less than half of its value. And I bought it as an investment because I had the cash available. And if I want to go, if I decide to sell it, I can sell it for twice what I paid for it. It was just a good opportunity, and I had money on the side.
And so, apparently a place to keep a boat.
Yeah, that too.
So that does factor in, right? So the circumstances presented themselves in such a way that you could potentially buy something and turn around and resell it at a profit, which is an investment.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what we need to unpack a little bit is what's the time horizon of said investment?
No, that's a good question.
That's an interesting one because it does have a real impact here.
Your rate of return is affected
is affected by time, but also the way you analyze an investment may be affected by time.
Mm.
Speaking of time, it is time.
Not possible.
It is. It blew by, but it's time we got to take our first break. So I want you guys to stick around, though. When we come back, we're going to talk about how time becomes relevant in the psychology of investing. This and more. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We'll see. All right, hey, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. This is your host, Dave Littlejohn, in studio with me today.
Matt Dixon.
And we were talking about the psychology of investing. If you want to get caught up, this is one where the first segment had plenty already in there to unpack. So grab the podcast. It'll be available tomorrow at our webpage at littlejohninvest.com. And you can get caught up on this one. But I think the biggie we're talking about today is how it's sort of the mental game of investing and how that can monkey with folks.
Mind over market.
Mind over market. I like it.
Yeah.
That's probably end up being the podcast title, right?
Well, yeah, let's roll with that.
Yeah, we could do that. So anyway, we talked a little bit about how in the first segment, just some of the concepts, like talked a little bit about Warren Buffett, for example, huge advantage of time, and that a lot of investors, time can be a real issue. And so we need to explore that a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Matt, when you're looking at an investment, you talked about your boat.
Yeah,
right?
Bought
a second boat.
Mainly as an investment.
Okay, so how long are you willing to sit on this boat? Because, you're tied up resources now.
I have,
Like, what is, kind of walk me through the mindset of what's going on here.
Okay, well, first, I plan to put a little bit of elbow grease into it because, I put, $100, $200 into the boat. It'll sell for probably an extra $1,000 to $1,500. So a little bit of upfront money and time, a lot better return. So there's that. That's one piece. Second piece being, it does a few things that my boat doesn't do. It's better for really small rivers. It's a little bit more nimble.
Okay.
So I'll probably get a little bit of use out of it. And as the paint's starting to ding and things are maybe needing...
Just say, I'm going to sell my other boat now and keep this one because it does stuff I like.
Not quite. But I'll use it for a little bit. And then when the time comes, go ahead and move on from it. But right now is not a great time to be a seller because of the fact that people are hurting. Inflation sucks right now. I will wait until people have more cash in their pocket and there is this allure of more money on the table.
Okay. So we're not going to ask you to disclose what you're into the boat or anything like that on air. That's not the point. But what if you'll notice, this is I'm just going to point out to our very intelligent listeners who've already figured this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You actually didn't give a time frame.
No.
What you said was when it's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is that time frame 10 years from now?
No, probably 5 to 6.
Okay, so 5 to 6. And here's the thing. You said you got this boat for what you believe about half price of what you could sell it for.
Yeah, and when I sell it, I'll triple my money.
Okay, so if you sell it in 5 years for 3 times what you paid for it,
mm-hmm.
So your annualized return on that is pretty good. Because there's a cheat, sort of a hack, right? Where the rule of 72, how many years does it take to double? Mm-hmm. If you double your money in 6 years, you make about 12%.
Right.
So if we divide 72 by 5, right, that gives us like 14-something percent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're making like 14.5%. If you were to double, but if you doubled it again,
right,
your rate of return's actually fantastic.
Yeah.
Right. It's, you know, you're probably making, you know, compounding it in the, you know, mid 20% range.
Right. So make 20% a year and get some use out of it along the way and make some memories.
Right. So that would definitely pencil relative to other potential investments that you could have out there.
Right.
And you get some utility value to personally use it, right? So you get some personal benefit. So, yeah, I think that would qualify as a pretty good investment. And it does fit within the scope of what you do, right? You're an outdoorsman.
Right.
Right? So well, you like the stuff.
It sounds cocky or arrogant, but it's not. I would say I have some expertise in the area. I've done this 30 times, maybe more, maybe 40. So I've done it enough to know when it's a good deal. And I think that is relevant to listeners because you can't just go out and just willy-nilly throw money at things unless, you know what you're doing.
Yeah. This is like people that say, I want to flip houses.
Yeah,
like, and I'm like, do you know how to do that?
Do you know how to use
a
skill saw?
Can you spot a bargain? And can you figure out if there's enough margin in the project that you can do this? So, yeah.
I mean, I had a friend recently say, well, I'm going to buy this business. And I'm like, okay, well, what does the business make? And what is your overhead going to be? And, you know, you get into the details. And I think the person quickly realized, like, oh, my gosh, I hadn't thought of even half the things that's going to go into this. And I'm like, you should pump the brakes and talk to someone qualified that has owned a business before.
Right.
And knows the ropes and can tell you with confidence, you know, you might be okay here or, oh, this is a horrible idea.
Yeah, even if it's – because the funny thing is it could be a great idea and you could still screw it up.
Exactly.
Right? So that's the reality of businesses. So that's where you get into the sort of consulting side of things, which is if you don't know, find somebody that knows more than you and start picking their brain.
Absolutely.
Right? But back to the time horizon on this one, right? So what I want to use your – this boat's a fun example, right?
Okay.
So you kind of pinned it as more like 5 years. Now, 5 years, I would qualify that as long-term enough.
Sure.
Right?
I would agree.
I consider that long-term because if you had somebody that came along and offered you to triple your money tomorrow
– I'd do it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you'd say, well, you know what? It's just I'm accelerating the return so much that I'm willing to forgo the personal use because I can do something with that resource if I got it now.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're seeing now the use case here where Matt's got some expertise in an area, understands the value of what he was able to get, understands the value of what he thinks he can sell it for. There is some risk, right? There's some risk that the market really goes sour and
it could get stolen. Yep. I could sink it at the bottom of the river.
Right. There, so there's real risks associated with this But nevertheless, there's an actual investment case to be made for what he's doing.
Right.
And we have a time horizon associated. So the risks become more understandable because mm-hmm. you've done them in advance. And we know the time horizon. We know the rate of return, so it makes sense. Okay. So
one of the things I think people in the stock market, and I'm just kind of jumping maybe ahead of you on this one.
You're probably going where I want to go. So let's do this.
I think some people, they get into an investment, whether it's a boat, whether it's stocks, whatever it is, real estate, but they do it because they have this fear of missing out on something. And they have some cash or they have some type of resource and they're like, well, I gotta get into something because I don't want to miss out on an opportunity. And they don't really fully break down, you know, is that the best avenue for me to take? Or is this a good investment? They're just scared to miss the boat.
Yeah, there's some of that where I want to get into the IPO or this, that, and the other. I remember a few years back when Dutch Brothers IPO'd and everybody mm-hmm. wanted in on it. And it shot up in value a ton. It's since kind of collapsed from there. And so this is not a commentary on whether it's good, bad, or otherwise.
Right.
Or is it a recommendation? It's just this is what happened, right? It mm-hmm. debuted at $35 or something, shoots up to $80, and today it's trading at like $22.
Yeah.
Right? So there's an example of a wild ride where people really wanted in. They weren't necessarily investing, though. They were sort of speculating that, well, it's got to be great, right? And so sometimes I call this lemming mentality.
I kind of liken it to, do you remember when Dogecoin was going crazy?
Yeah.
Like, it was that kind of lemmings thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Everyone sees other people making money, and then they're looking at this like, well, I got to jump on this train,
yeah.
but the train's already left the station.
Well, and the wild thing is some people really did make money.
Oh, they did,
right?
Sure.
There were people that were in on things like various cryptocurrencies and this NFT thing, which, you know, you think about like
and some people
a year,
are still
year
making
and a half
money.
Ago,
yeah.
That was a big conversation. In fact, 2000
what was it
17? We were having this conversation, I think 2017. It's a while ago, but I remember having conversations with people when Bitcoin was at like 17,000 in 2017, and then it went up to like 70 something over the next year or two. And then it sort of collapsed, and I don't know where it is today, somewhere in the mid-20s, I think,
mm-hmm.
mid to low 20s. And so it's higher than it was in 2017, but the reality is there are plenty of ways you could invest in probably the S&P 500 and still had a similar return over time. But if you were one of these people that got it for $2 a coin, okay,
mm-hmm.
then you hit a point where it went, you know, asymmetric, and you're like, oh, my goodness. Okay, so we know the fear of missing out motivates people sometimes.
Mm-hmm. What are some other things that kind of...
The lemming concept of hey, the whole herd is going, so we're just going to run with it. Where are we going? I don't know, but we're going there fast. Right. So I think that's a biggie.
That's kind of just chasing returns,
yeah.
you know?
But here's the thing. Chasing returns or fear of losses. This is the time, that the timing conversation I want to encourage investors to think about. If you own a home,
mm-hmm.
okay, really if you own a lot of things, your boat's still a good example of this. If you could see the price of your house in real time, all the time running across a screen on a ticker tape, and what people would be willing to pay for your house.
You'd go crazy.
It'd probably drive you nuts.
Yeah. Like,
because your house, though, it's great that you only see what it's worth when somebody makes an offer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if the offer's not high enough, then you decide what it's worth by not accepting the offer. In the stock market, the last trade that took place, we assume that that trade represents the value of the entire company. Right? We extrapolate the entire value of the company based on the last trade. Or at least that's what's implied, because that's what the market's doing. Anytime you see a price to earnings ratio, anytime you see a price to sales, anytime you see a market capitalization, those are all based on the last trading price of that stock, or at least the last snapshot when they had a trade and they froze time to calculate at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we think about a company like Apple that's got, you know, tens, maybe hundreds of millions of shares outstanding. Somebody buys one share of Apple at the end of the day, and then the market closes, and that becomes the price of Apple until the next morning
mm-hmm.
when the market reopens. And if you're saying, well, what about after hours trading and so forth? Yeah, that's true. But as far as the exchanges are concerned, that was the last trade. until it reopens the next day. So then we calculate like, oh, well, the value of Apple is as if every share traded at that price.
Right. And that's crazy to think about, because imagine how much like investor psychology and popularity yeah. contest goes into determining, you know, on any given month.
Oh, you want to talk about crazy. I'm going to cliffhanger you there, because I will tell you there's a crazy thing that part of it makes total sense, but part of it is legitimately out to lunch for investors.
Mm.
You need to know which part is which, and I'm not going to tell you until after this break.
Darn it.
Exactly. Stick around. This one, it's shockingly simple, and it's probably a facepalm when you hear it, but it is super important. So we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Some things are better off.
Ooh.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio today with
Matt Dixon.
Hey, Matt. I wanted to finish up on our last segment with one more thought, right? I told our listeners we had the
You left them on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember how I phrased it too, because it was something that investors really, it's really important, and it's kind
but
of
it's way more simple.
Yeah. And it's a timing issue. We were talking about Apple stock in the last trade of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing about time in investing.
Okay.
Right? Or investment time horizon. You got to understand that we are not all playing the same game.
Even if we're invested in the same stock, we're
exactly.
not necessarily playing the same game.
Because there are some people that are buy and hold with Apple stock. There are some people that day trade Apple stock. There are some people that own Apple stock as collateral for options on Apple stock.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using sophisticated strategies of hedging around it. There are some people that are owning indexes that own Apple stock. There are some people that are shorting Apple stock. Right.
Right.
So everybody has a different use case or a different investor theory that they are implementing, but it's all happening on the same stock at the same time.
Right.
It's important to understand this, because if Matt has a time horizon of today to mm-hmm. flip a trade in Apple, and I have a time horizon of 5 years, right, we can have very different opinions about the value of Apple stock.
Absolutely.
Okay. And because of that, you can see the movement of the stock getting jockeyed around. And it really, some of this is that concept of the herd mentality, that lemon
yeah.
thing. It's like, okay, well, if you get enough people in the short term that start selling something, and then some computers jump on board and they start selling it too, before you know it, you've got a real move on your hands. That was kind of interesting. I think about a couple years back. Do you remember GameStop? So GameStop goes through this crazy scenario where there were more stocks shorted than existed,
mm-hmm.
and the market figured it out, and a bunch of short-term people became buy and holders, and they were buying up everything they could, because as they bought the stock, it drove the price higher and higher and higher, and then people that had shorted the stock had to buy it back.
It was all the hedge
fund
managers.
And there was nothing to buy.
Yeah,
well, yeah, institutional buyers got really
burned,
cornered. And then, of course, it got worse because, you know, the exchange it was
well,
involved.
And Robinhood halted.
Like locked out
yeah.
the investors and not the institutions. It was a screw job,
mm-hmm.
right? It was a screw job. But that's a scenario where most of the trades aligned.
Mm-hmm.
And so you didn't have a ton of people with different use cases. You kind of had two parties, the dear Lord, please get me out of this thing somehow, and the we're going
hold
to the moon,
it to
baby,
the moon.
Diamond hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was wild to watch.
Yeah.
Right? And then it happened with AMC and a couple other stocks that people wondered if they could get.
That was
a
just
bunch
the
of
year
folks.
Of the meme stocks.
Yeah. And it was a unique time. There's COVID. We had a lot of people that were at home trading and so forth. And a lot of people probably lost their shirts too.
Oh, yeah.
So
because everyone thought they were a trader. during that year.
Trading is not like investing. Time horizons are different.
No.
So when we talk about time in the market, how long can your trade last, or how long before your trade becomes an investment?
Right. And sometimes people get that confused because, I mean, I'm sure it's happened to you too, where someone calls and they're like, hey, I want to hand you $100,000 and I'm going to, you know, let you play with it for 2 years. And you're like, or sometimes even less, manage this money for a year. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, and I will tell you flat out, I've had people say, well, we're going to try you for a year. And I just said, I don't think we should play this game.
Nope.
And they're like, what? So, well, don't get me wrong. I mean, like, that's how we make a living. But if the goal is to make a horse chase where you're like, well, I'm going to take some money and you're going to take some money and we're going to say who's going to do best. And I look at this and go, so let me understand this. The only way that I get to keep your business is if I outperform what you do. You've just told me, on the one hand, I need to be a fiduciary and not take unnecessary risks. But on the other hand, the only way I keep your business is if I outperform you, which means I have to take risk.
That's a contradiction.
You're saying, if I guess right and the risks pay off, I get the job. If I guess wrong and they don't, I don't get the job. And I think to myself, this is really kind of an inappropriate structure here, because you're basically telling me two things at the same time. Don't take more risk than is fiduciarily appropriate, but you must take more risk.
And that can't exist.
Yeah, that doesn't function right. And so I'd rather look somebody in the eye and go, I appreciate conceptually that you've thought of us, but I'm not willing to play a game where I must either get lucky to not harm you.
Or go gambling. We're not here to gamble.
I don't want to do that.
No.
So it's just, I don't want to risk our reputation, and I don't want to risk your money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even if I think we could do it.
Sure. It's just not worth it.
I mean, like, I could think we could do it and we may be able to do it, but I'm not willing to do it.
Right.
Because that's not what our value proposition is. We're about appropriate risk adjusted returns, not swing for the fences and hope we get lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's a really big difference that I think a lot of people need to hear and understand, because if you just chase the performance, you will end up the lemming that runs yourself off the cliff oftentimes.
And the problem with performance is it's very asset class driven. I mean, even, I know it's kind of fun to pick on these a little bit, but this is there's been this growing danger within index funds, particularly S&P 500, as it's become more and more tech heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so as it's become more and more tech heavy and it's more and more driven by these super duper mega cap companies, you are having more and more concentration risk stack up inside of this index.
Right. If 20% of that index is tech,
it's funny because the beta is one because it's the index, and it is diversified by the standard of, like, well, it has a bunch of stocks in it, but by weighting and by sector, it's clearly biased in one area.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you say, well, but the sectors are reflective of the index isn't reflective of the sectors. I go, okay, well, then as long as tech, which is like 50% of the index or something, you know, fact check me later, but whatever, is like, well, as tech goes, so does the index.
Mm-hmm.
So if tech's having a good year, 2021, woohoo. Tech has a bad year, 2022, wah, wah.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't it down over 20% in 2022?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so everyone.
Well, in 2021, if we stripped away like the top 10 stocks, it was negative.
Right.
Right, and they were the super duper mega caps tech, super duper mega tech.
You're kind of living and dying by the sword. It's like the football offense that only throws the ball. Yeah. It's like,
well, the funny thing is, what drove the returns of the S&P 500 was basically the biggest positions of the NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. The NASDAQ outperformed
it. It looks great when it's working, but man, when it doesn't work, it hurts. That's why I kind of use the analogy of the football team that only throws the ball. Yeah, you ran up 600 yards in this game and won. Congratulations. But if the defense.
Yeah. If your quarterback has an off day, you have a.
Yeah. And you can't run the
your
football.
Your whole team has an off day. Yeah.
Right. You get blown out.
Anyway, the idea, though, of measuring the right time, it's also important because I think how we perceive risk looks different. Like if you're day trading, then your risk perception becomes much more speculative in nature. typically.
Yeah, and what does risk even mean at that point, right?
Like, well, I mean, because you're basically making these micro trades, typically trying to, you know,
game the system,
taking advantage of the intraday movement of a position and saying, well, if I can buy it for $102 and sell it for $102.04, and I can do that enough times, if you make 4 cents enough times on a big enough position, it will add up to something.
What I find so funny in all of that is you're basically banking on the fact that you see an exploit or that the price is incorrectly priced
based on what is about in the scrum of the lemmings.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Really, you're the smartest lemming in the group.
Scrum. Oh my gosh.
Can we make t-shirts? Now I really want a t-shirt. Just a bunch of
lemming scrum. So
I'm retitling the show just so you know.
it's the psychology of the lemming scrum.
That's it.
So anyway, but yeah, and then Warren Buffett looks at this and goes, I am not playing this game.
He just kind of sits on his throne and watches as the lemmings do their thing.
No,
and
it's like, you know, because he doesn't care. It's just like the house owner, right? You don't have to sell.
Well,
he could just say, well, I'm not going to sell today.
The way I kind of envision his methodology is he's just kind of sitting there, and once all the lemmings run themselves off the cliff, he's like, well, it's a good time to buy. And the minute they start running, he's like, oh, I got to get out of the herd. Let me go sit on the sidelines.
Well, it's funny. He's such a contrarian to lemming behavior.
Exactly.
And you can do that when you have a big war chest of cash. And what I remember is in like 1998 and 1999, I remember people saying, I think Warren Buffett's dried up and over the hill.
Because he wasn't following the big tech push of the late
90s. Back when he was in his 60s and are like, yeah, he's over the hill.
He's lost
it. And now 20 years later and he's in his like late 80s or 90s. I should really look this up.
90s, I think, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's 90s. But so it's 20 some odd years later and people are like, this guy.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, he's still relevant to the conversation. And all he did in 98-9 is when he goes, I can't figure out how anybody's valuing this stuff. So he just said, oh, looks like a lemming scrum.
Mm-hmm.
Not his words, right? But lemming scrum, never mind.
Punt.
Right? And then later on when he goes, oh, looks like a bunch of bloody lemmings. It's like, all right, I'm going to go buy them. Right? There's your British t-shirt right there. Bloody lemmings, I'll go invest. Right?
There it is.
And now you know.
Someone get this man a sketch pad and a pencil.
Matt's all about making t-shirts for this stuff.
I love
at
it.
At some point, we're going to have a whole collection. They'll be worthless, but we'll think they're
our main
valuable.
Business strategy will no longer be investments,
it's
simply
like
political
selling,
satire
selling,
on t-shirts.
Yeah, investment satire off of our radio show. Brilliant. Okay, well, look, so speaking of not satire, but let's do this. We got to grab our last break. When we're going to come back, we're going to talk a little bit about confirmation bias and a lot more about how to build actual discipline into the process and not just, you know, a head case.
Mm.
But we got to run. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show, where today we are helping you, our favorite listeners, and those of you, especially DIYers, but nearly, you know, even our own clients, anybody that's working with folks, helping with kind of the getting the head game on for investing.
We're right? trying to prevent you from being a lemming in the scrub.
Yeah, in the bloody lemming scrum.
Yeah.
Right?
Stay out. You know, warning.
Here's the thing that I have observed with I've used this on a show before, but let me kind of bring it back. When you talk about firefighters, okay? Firefighters are trained to run into a burning building, and they know what to do, or they know when to not run in. They know when they can, and the likelihood of them being successful at getting in and out and saving people's lives and structures and so forth is pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
Where a non-firefighter pulls the same thing and they go and die,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe they get lucky, but most of the time, like, that's a good way to die. What's the difference? Right? Is the firefighter not afraid?
Well, you're both human. You both got two legs and two arms. But the difference is they have experience and they've been there and they've trained for that moment.
It's the training,
yeah.
right? Because the reality is that when you have a fight or flight event, and you go into a dangerous spot, you're likely to make errors in judgment that can cost you.
And the firefighter knows what to look for. He sees the big red flag, like, oh, that post is on fire and I don't have much time left in this building.
And here's the other part, right? The firefighter may be just as afraid as somebody else. It's a dangerous situation, but the training is what helps them survive.
Right. Same thing for the markets, right? Like, I don't think you're going to stand up here and pretend like when the markets drop, you know, 20%, you're not like worried, right?
Well,
like,
that's the thing, right? Is
that
we all suffer the same feelings. Like, if I look around, if you were to ask me, like, how does it feel?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel good.
Right.
Right. I just got back from South Carolina. I will tell you this, to see gas prices at $2.79 a gallon and then to come back to Oregon and have them be closer to $4 a gallon for this, you know, what I believe is the same gasoline. It's like, wait a second here. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels expensive. We just renewed our health insurance. It was for the family. What a ridiculous amount of money to get effectively nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's actually pretty insulting. Right.
Yeah.
Really? Like, this is just another tax. It's the healthcare tax because, you know, some people pay for healthcare and other people don't. And so the people that pay for healthcare subsidize. And that's how that works. So all of this to say what? Right. I don't even know where my point is. I'm ranting about the health insurance thing. I guess I'm looking at for all... Sorry. I did. Now we're going to laugh at it too. I gotta remember where I was even going with the.
I know. I was waiting for it too. I was like, "Oh man, he's really gonna pull this together."
Yeah,
no, nope.
he's really not. I was gonna go back to. Now I gotta spool it back to where was I at?
Well,
Matt was supposed to listen and he didn't help me on this one. I'm kidding, right? No, I just got rolling on it.
You were talking about being kind of disciplined with your investments and not being the lemming.
Well, we can, if we roll it that far back to the beginning of the segment.
Yes.
I guess that's where we're at. I guess I was looking at, I know, it was the firefighter. Now I can bring it all back together. We talked about the firefighters.
Yes.
We talked about training.
We did.
Talked about how the world's messed up and how I feel it too. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I see life getting really expensive.
Right.
I see, like we're looking at the, before the show starts, headline on Yahoo Finance, that credit card debt, new record high of over $1 trillion. So consumer credit now over $1 trillion. GDP is just over $26 trillion. So we're looking at that's approaching 4% of GDP is unsecured consumer debt.
Ooh.
Right? And that's not including student loans or medical debt or anything else. That's just
the credit card debt. Not your home mortgage.
No mortgages, right?
Yeah.
So you look at that, and what I can tell you is, like, when somebody says, look, I mean, the economic data, we still have decent jobs numbers, and inflation looks like it's coming down. And and I look at this and go, but why does it feel so awful?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why do I look around and I see such rampant rise in homelessness, drug deaths, and overdoses and so forth? You know, why do we see so many things that look so bad? Why
our education system?
And some of it's because that's what we see on the news, right? And so you have this tendency, because of the negative bias that we talked about at the beginning of the show, to start to extrapolate that everything is bad, right? Because like, oh well, this is all I see, it must be everywhere. It's not statistically true, right? Like, murder rates are way lower than 30 years ago. Like, violence has declined in general. Like, all that stuff is true. Retail theft is up a bunch. Petty crime is up a bunch because we're no longer enforcing in certain areas to stop it. All of that feels terrible. And so the psychology of
the
average person, that groupthink does start to get baked into the pie.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the lemming issue. And so
that's
where you start to see and you start to confirm a bias. It's like, well, it feels bad, so I believe it's bad. And the tricky part is, like, does it become a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Right.
Like, do the markets go down because enough people really feel bad?
I mean, you can even paint a more extreme picture. The markets could be doing wonderful. Companies could be making record earnings. Everything could be great in the markets. Business is doing awesome. But if everyone was to discard that information and say, the sky is falling, and pull all their money out of their accounts and sell off all their stock, what's it going to do to the share price?
Yeah.
It, it just doesn't have to reflect the reality of how the company's doing.
Yeah. Well, in the lemming scrum,
mm-hmm.
right, if you panic, you become one of those traits that prints at whatever price is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
therein lies the issue, is that if you throw discipline out the window, you get what you get.
Right.
And I think that's the real issue. Is so a few questions I think investors should ask themselves. Okay, if you find yourself trying to decide if you should buy or sell something, pretend for a moment that if you already own it, you should ask yourself, would I buy it today?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I don't own it now, do I want to buy it? And if you are trying to figure out, so if you're trying to figure out if you should sell it, that's one of them. Would I buy it today? And then the other is,
do I want to own it long term?
Well, how long? And then you mm-hmm. say, is there something else I would rather
is
own
there
instead?
A better opportunity?
Okay, because this is a hard one. Sometimes it is okay to sell things if the idea is to move it into something that's a better opportunity. But you do want to make sure it's a better opportunity, which goes back to that original question. If I don't own this, do I want to? And do I think it's the right time? Right? So these are questions that are hard when you are in the game, right? I own this thing and I have to think, well, if I didn't own it, would my behavior be different? Because when I own it, I treat it differently.
Mm.
That's the issue, right? And so these are some steps that you can take. And so I would encourage you, and the other is, before you ever enter into a trade, decide what the rules of engagement are. Because when people change the rules as they're playing, that's when the mistakes happen.
Right.
Okay. So since we are running on the end of time here and the music is playing, how do they reach us, Matt, to get more help?
Why don't you give us a call? 541-375-0898.
All right. And as always, check out the website and everything else. But we got to run for now. So until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240. Take you again.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.